We'll discuss a verse in chapter 16, the divine and demoniac natures. But if more people come, we can switch to our planned discussion. Every once in a while, even all the time, of course, it's good to hear the verses from chapter 16, just to make sure we're not developing the nature of demoniac persons. And these verses help us to understand the kind of so-called civilization that we're living in. So let's turn to page 761, chapter 16, text 19. Verse, one of the verses in Bhagavad Gita that Srila Prabhupada would quote often. Tanam dushita kruran samsareshu naradamam shapam yajasam ashubhan asuri shevayonishu. So Krishna is speaking, quite frankly and directly. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Now, how are species of life classified according to the Vedic system? It's not the same thing as the modern classification of life forms into species. So don't get that confusion that when you see the word species in Prabhupada's books, it's not conforming to the contemporary scientific division. The Vedic system is that species are classified in terms of consciousness. Every time you see a difference in bodily form, you should know that you're going to see a difference in consciousness. And the converse is also so. Every time you see a difference in consciousness, you should know that the body is different. Now, even in the same body, or even in the same form, the body does change. And there are changes or alterations in consciousness. Just like the example we always give. Before puberty, everyone's thinking one way. After puberty, they think another way. Because the body has changed, the consciousness has changed. So the whole Vedic classification of species has to do with consciousness. Now there are demoniac species of life. That means there are forms of life in which spiritual consciousness is zero. You may be interested to know that in the Vedic classification of 400,000 human species means that most of the human species are uncivilized. To get a human body that is civilized is very rare. So, there are many human forms which are just, as Prabhupada described in the book, like hunters in the jungle. And then, of course, there are animal species in which all the animal species do not allow you any reflection on the Supreme Absolute Truth. So Krishna here is describing what the ocean of material existence is like. Samsara, the ocean of repeated birth and death. That is how we should see nature. As a vast ocean of living entities taking one body. He's having to be quiet. Taking one body after another. And it's very rare to get a human body. Having gotten a human body, if you waste it, That is considered the greatest tragedy. Now you notice people say they don't feel any sense of danger that they may be wasting their human form of life. Interestingly enough, it's funny how at the same time that no one feels any danger that they're wasting the human form of life, they also feel quite confident that they'll have a next life. In other words, so-called reincarnation is really surging in acceptance. It's no longer a strange thing. Everybody talks about my next life or so many things like that. Some or other, they all have this sentiment that their next life will be one of light and bliss and peace. One kind of, what do you call it, alternative knowledge magazine, Omni, did a survey on what its readers were thinking about the next life. Its readership includes people who are always university graduates with a higher than normal income. So the conclusion was that the next life is just going to be wonderful. It's going to be light, peace, love, happiness. And there's nothing you can do to prepare for it. The only way, in fact, the only way you can prepare for it is just to be ready to be surprised. One guy was describing it, it's going to be a festival of the senses. It's amazing that while this popular sentimental acceptance of reincarnation is in the West is really booming, at the same time people have no fear of what they're doing with the human form of life. No fear whatsoever. This is a great tragedy. This is considered by Bhagavad Gita to be the greatest danger. That's why Krishna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Swapamapyasa dharmasya tayate matopaya, that the little bit of advancement in Krishna consciousness will protect you from this greatest fear, the greatest danger, which is to lose your human form of life, to go back down into the unconscious species. And then you may not be able, there are countless births before you get back to the human form. You see, working with Srila Prabhupada, he explained once that it's not that you just become one kind of horse or one kind of mosquito. No, you've got to become all types. All types. All types of trees. So, once you slip down, it's a great disaster. But no one cares. They don't understand that this human form of life is a junction. You can go either way, up or down. Therefore, this present so-called civilization is soul-killing, in that it's killing the eternal soul's possibilities in the human form of life. And we're so casual and cavalier and carefree about it all. This is what society has done to us because we wanted to take birth in such a society in which we become very whimsical, frivolous. This is what we wanted. Nevertheless, in spite of our bewildered desires, somehow or other, we have contacted Lord Chaitanya's network of pure love and mercy, and we're having a chance to serve Krishna. But we should be mindful of the Holocaust that's going on all around us. People get so agitated about the Holocaust in Germany during World War II, and so many Christians were killed. But they don't see everyone's involved in the Holocaust. That's why we sing Samsara Dhala Nalina Loka. Material existence is like a blazing fire. You can't put out a blazing fire with just one hose of water, a few buckets. No. In fact, when there's a big forest fire, many fire departments combined can't put it out. They just have to wait until there's a big rainstorm. So, in Kali Yuga, the rainstorm is Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And we shudder to think where we would be ending up without that mercy. Just like tonight is Friday night, you can see so many people scurrying about Broadway and Queen Street. They're wanting some fascination for their senses. All these shops and cinemas, they provide that hope of fascination for the senses. But that very fascination they're seeking will take them to another body. And all the fascinations they're seeking these days will not take them to a human body, for sure. You've got to be able to understand the consequences of the movements of your mind. The way your mind moves, it develops a kind of body for you in your next life that doesn't exist now. In other words, material life means mental speculation. Your mind is always vibrating with sense objects, considering this sense object, rejecting that same sense object. That mental activity develops another body for you. It's a kind of speculation when your mind starts thinking about sense objects. It turns them this way and that way. It feels them. It wills them. It wills to be with them. That whole mentality develops your next body. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam says that someone who's an actual sage watches the movements of the mind, because those movements of the mind, those fluctuations and vibrations of the mind, bring about the next body. So Krishna is telling you here what happens. Tanam Vishatakuran. Those who are envious and mischievous, what does Krishna do with them? Throws them into the ocean of material existence, into demoniac species, unclean life forms. Now, what does it mean to be envious and mischievous? We got an inclination of what it means to be envious last week. For no good reason at all, we don't want to hear from Krishna. Last week we were discussing, Krishna says, Arjuna, because you're not envious of me, I'm going to tell you how to get free from the miseries of material existence. But as soon as people hear Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of God, is it, immediately they turn their minds off. For what reason? If we tell them, oh, there's a new Steven Spielberg movie coming, oh, we tell them Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. What? You're looking for attraction. Why not get information about the source of eternal attraction? But because they are contaminated, they don't know what they want. They don't know what's good for them. Have you realized that about yourself, yet innocent? It's a contamination. It's a feverish, deluded condition in which you really don't know what's good for you. You just, you know, you're hyper, but for what purpose? You ever go to the zoo and watch the monkeys? They have a zoo here with monkeys? They're so hyper. They're chatting all the time. They're jumping from tree to tree. But what's the purpose? So, you have a whole so-called civilization of hyper people. For no purpose at all, other than living for the same thing the monkey gets. Monkeys don't simply eat peanuts. They want the complete range of sense gratification, just like human beings. So, to be envious of Krishna means to reject Krishna for no good reason at all. They can't even go with a good reason, they just know. And envy of Krishna means to reject Krishna's law. In other words, everybody has this artificial confidence that, well, we've got to feel our own way through things. We've got to, you know, grope our own way. We've got to come up with our own truth. That's actually envy. They can't see it like that, though, because they're possessed by it. Mischievous means they're always performing horrible activities. They're always acting in a way that causes harm to themselves and harm to others. But they say, well, we don't know. We don't, you know, it seems to be all right. We're just trying to be loving and sensitive and kind. No, the standard of Bhagavad Gita says mischievous. Why? Because as a human being, you're supposed to know what the Dharma is, what the law is. If you don't know, then don't act with such great energy. But everybody loves to act with great energy, regardless of the fact that they don't know. This is insanity. This is the insanity we are protesting against. You don't know, yet you're acting with such drive, with such energy. And it's all based on ignorance. Therefore, once again, go to the zoo and watch the monkeys. They swing from tree to tree with such energy. They chatter with such energy. Run around, scamper around with such energy. They don't know. And how are they different from the humans? But we get caught up in that because this is the situation we've taken birth in. So Krishna is saying here, if this is the way you want to be, then I throw you into the ocean of material existence. And you'll appear in various demoniac species. This gives us a clear understanding.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. So you were just discussing the three kinds of interpretation. This is what we were just discussing. We're just having a good time discussing some merry topics. You're part of it. Yes. Now, we all know we have some kind of determination. You have some determination, yes?
I can tell the time, I guess.
It seems like that actually everybody's got some striving for something, right?
Well, you have the affection of it, I suppose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have some determination, right? Mm-hmm. You have some determination, right?
Yeah.
Now, we have to be a little skillful to see that determination, to see what we're really persistent at. Like in yourself, what would you say you're persistent at? We've been discussing for the past.
It's surviving up from there. But from now on, anyhow.
Survival passes.
Making another Christmas.
Making another
Remember the other, something like that. Living day, just like day to day. When you're young, you feel as though that you've got a leasehold of life and that you're going to live forever. But as you get older, you realize that you haven't. And believe me, time passes so quickly you don't realize it when you're young. Great pity. Somebody said that the youth is wasted on the young, and I think you're right, sir.
Youth is wasted on the young. Would you call these guys here young?
Definitely.
So you feel, Kate, you feel you have a leasehold on life? And
you don't think of it passing away. You need to know most of it, don't you? Where you go, or that sort of stuff.
So you're basically just, trying to make it from day to day?
Well, I'm okay, I'm happy. That's the main thing. It's very difficult to be happy when you're not well. I think that's the most important thing in life, is to try and keep well.
Physical health, you mean?
Yeah. Because you know, if you haven't got health, it's pretty bad. And also have enough of the wherewithal to keep yourself in a reasonable amount of comfort. But that's only my
idea. Money.
Yeah.
Is it the wherewithal to keep it up?
Well, you know, if they have the house, that
was painful.
Or else marry a rich widow, or a rich... I'm afraid there's not too many of those around.
And your determination? What?
Oh, I suppose to keep my studies, but at times I get a few obstacles and like this.
What are you studying?
I'm studying Alexander.
So, and your determination to do that is?
There's an upset by my financial difficulties, keeping myself fed and paying for the course.
So, Emerson, what would your determination be? If you look at your life, what will we see the thing that you're really persistent about?
So, asking questions why?
Persistent questioner.
Why? Why am I here? Why am I here? For what reason?
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think the best kind of determination is that we should have? Do you think that your kind of determination is the best? Survival or making it from day to day? Or?
I think for most people it is. And you have to eat. That's it. You can put a certain amount of time into something and certain into other and make them one. It's got to be 40 hours or so, whatever it is. And then after that you can...
So you feel that your kind of determination in how would we describe it in economic sustenance or what would you call it, economic
maintenance? Well, I'm glad determination. I mean, most people just get up from the minimum. I don't think they say to themselves, oh, I'm going to be really determined today, I'm going to, you know, you just get up and brush your teeth and have some cornflakes or whatever, and then out you go. Hope for the best.
So, you feel that, but is that the best kind of determination? What would we call that, the work-day determination?
Well, it's more survival. I mean, that's what it has been all through the ages, isn't it, you know?
Now, we were just discussing before you came in, the difference in determination in animal life and human life. Now, do you consider this a special kind of determination? Or something that both human and non-human species share?
I haven't really thought much about it. I mean, animals just more just think about what they're going to eat, where the next meal's coming from. They have a very strong urges, and they'd like humans, you know, just to keep the species going. Whether there's anything greatly more in it than that, I don't know.
So what's the difference then between the two?
Well, in a lot of ways, there's not much difference, you know. When you come to see the way that some animals look after their young, and they don't kill each other, and they don't murder, they don't have wolves to any great extent. Probably in a lot of ways, they're better than humans.
So basically then, what you're saying is that the determination of most people is not human. Or, shall we say, it's no different than the animals.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I think that 90% or 95% or 99% of humans in every country are pretty reasonable sort of people.
Okay, how does that reason, that's why we're talking about determination, how does that reasonableness manifest? In relation to what?
Well, they look after their family. The average person, the average man, I suppose, he looks after his family and that, and then if there's anything left over or anything to spare, he'll get some of that, you know, to anybody else that maybe might need it, perhaps, or to help out. But if I follow the golden rule, whatever they call the golden rule, and that's it, you'd probably try and do a bit better than that, but not many people do, I suppose.
So you say a few people they give in charity after they meet their family's needs.
Yeah.
And what kind of causes do they give to?
Well, ideally. Some people support children, others support the community in some ways, perhaps with time. And,
but still, the objectives, how are they different, let's say, from an ant colony's objectives?
Well, as you've got to, you can think about it. I mean, I don't know whether the ants can think about their situation in the universe and that, but
true.
Human beings are sort of a...
They think about it, but...
Kind of pinnacle, isn't it?
Yeah, but what do they end up doing with all that thinking ability that's different?
He built a few mighty cathedrals and works of art, music, and...
What's the music all about?
Well, it depends whether you like it or not. For me, I like jazz, you know. I like to go to the New Orleans or some place like that and listen, to the real jazz masters.
And what are the real jazz masters? What are they really like?
Well, I don't know if they're like personally, but they, Louis Armstrong was a good man. He was most upset about the American system, which was pretty hard on black people there.
Didn't give them enough sense gratification, right?
Well, I mean, kept them down. And
because some people had more sense gratification, some people had less.
Yeah.
So do you see what I'm getting at here?
Yeah.
After all is said and done, it comes down to the same thing.
Yeah.
These things are described in Sanskrit as ahara, nidra, baya, maitra.
Material things.
Well, specifically, how to eat, how to sleep comfortably, how to protect yourself from fear, and how to mate.
Yeah.
Whether it's jazz playing or classical music playing, it all comes down to those things.
Mm.
You'd agree?
Oh, yes.
So, according to the standard of Bhagavad Gita, that's not human life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's been going on for quite a long while anyhow, hasn't it? So, it's been successful up till now.
Successful at what?
Well, I suppose by still being around, in 1997, I guess.
Who's still around?
The human race.
so are the trees. They have trees in California. How long have those trees in California been there, those redwoods?
Oh, yeah, thousands of years.
Yeah, right. So what's the great achievement? And for humans to do the same.
Yeah. Well, the longer you have to live, the longer that you have to change your evil ways of thinking and get on to something good, you know?
Is that what you have, or you just
become a Hare Krishna, or you have a business or something?
Actually, what usually happens is that you become a fossil. I mean, you're an exception, but most people your age become a fossil, right?
No, I just sit in front of the TV and gather dust.
So it's not true that the more time you have, the more options you have. People fossilize. They become very rigid and fixed in their ways.
Possibly, yes.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm sure most people your age or older, they're very fixed in their thinking. They can't change. They're caught in a whole life, decade after decade of certain kinds of behavior and determination and goals have cast a mold on them, And by the time they're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, they can't break that. So what we're trying to do is discuss determination and discuss it in a way that we can see determination as a part of everyone's life. Now you're going to school studying something, and it's a determination. Is that really the sum and substance of your determination?
Mm-hmm.
How would you further round out the presentation of your determination?
I suppose I'm determined to search for me. It's my beingness, search for the peace, understanding what's around me, what's inside.
What's inside you?
What's inside me? Heaviness.
You mean like your lungs or your pancreas?
The whole being. In right now. It's for me, it's just too far to speak. Not really.
Okay, so he has determination to get knowledge. Now, according to the Vedic standard, the Vedic literatures, of which Bhagavad Gita is one, you won't be successful in your quest. Well, let's put it this way. In order to get knowledge, you have to know where to turn. Otherwise, the sentiment to get knowledge is not enough to qualify for human life. That's a very bold statement, but please think about it. Simply to have the sentiment, I want knowledge, is not enough to qualify as a human. Now, could you understand how that might be so?
Yes, I said, yeah.
Because you could have a quest for knowledge simply how to build a better canoe or better spear or... But once again, the goals are simply how to fill your belly, how to protect your body. So one person tries to figure out a better spear. Another person figures out a quicker way to get to the supermarket, to the food store. What's the difference?
Oh, you don't match.
No. So our determination has to be more than these things if we're going to call ourselves human. And simply to want knowledge is not enough. Just like suppose you wanted... Well, I was going to say, suppose you wanted to buy gold. If you don't know anything about gold, isn't it very dangerous to go looking for gold?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We could say even the ordinary thing, like Sripati's here, he knows about cars. Suppose you don't know anything about cars and you want to go buy cars.
Yeah.
Right? Car dealers exist for people who don't know anything about cars, right? So you, as you say, look out, you're in trouble. But suppose I say, no, you're being harsh, you're being negative. I'm simply wanting to buy a car. I just want a good car. Why are you being negative, cynical? I just have this desire for a car. It's the same as, I just want knowledge. I just want to know. I just want to understand. Same thing. If you don't know where to look, if you don't know the authorized sources of knowledge, then you leave yourself wide open for problems.
Are you saying this is the answer?
Oh, you may think that, but we haven't got that far yet. But, let's say, if I wanted to buy a car, I find someone who has authoritative understanding. It's like, I always ask Tripa to you, please, find a good car. Because he knows about cars. I just don't trust myself. Well, I'm going to use my intuition. Car dealers love people who come to a car lot and use their intuition, don't they? You know, the old routine about, you know, someone coming to the car and they walk around and they kick the tires. Immediately you know you got a sucker, right? Yeah, it's good. So I think when you see something like they do that, huh? It's amazing, you know? Yeah. I know my father, he worked in the police department in New York City, but to make some extra income, he used to always sell used cars right in the next to the house in the driveway. You don't call it driveway, what do you call it?
Driveway.
Right. So he'd just buy these lemons for... You know, $100, and then he would, you know, he'd get a paint job put on by one of his friends, you know, you know, nice paint job, and then he had his sons. We had the slave out there polishing the chrome, and and you know, I used to watch out the window. People would come, you know, he'd advertise, you know, used car, you know, yeah. And people would come, you know, they'd have to fight over the car. Who could buy it? So that's what happens when you try to use your intuition and your own good feeling. Yes, this feels like a good car. Yes. Somebody could get in the car and they turn on the ignition and rev, you know, push down on the pedal. Oh, it sounds good, huh?
It's true, yeah, it must be a good car.
So, therefore, my point is simply to have this sentiment that you want knowledge is not enough. You have to know where to get the knowledge. Otherwise, you can still qualify as a fool while having this desire to have knowledge. Can you understand that?
Yep.
Like Megan, I'm sure you, you know so many people who say they're using their intuition to get higher understanding and how they want to understand the inner self. But as we've been discussing, there's nothing so wonderful about that. You can still be called a fool while having those sentiments because you don't know where to turn for authorized information. So we have to analyze our determination and see where is it really taking me and how. We're discussing determination. What language?
Sorry?
What language do you speak?
Hungarian.
Again. Again.
Yeah.
That's only one.
I only know one
way. I spend a lot of time in Hungary. I only know one way.
Not too much.
So, all right. Now that we've batted the ball around a bit, we've got some feel for what we mean by determination. Let's hear what Krishna says. Now, it might be interesting to hear what Krishna says. Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that everything emanates from him. Now, I don't think we have anyone in the room here who will say that everything emanates from him. Do we? Sometimes we do, but not right. You don't say that, do you?
Not here.
Okay. So, that means Krishna has authority. If you're the source of all matter and all spirit, that means you have authority. Okay. Krishna explains determination in three ways. According to three modes of material nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. These are like three different kinds of diseases you can get. One is a mild disease, the other is medium disease, and another is a very, it's a terminal disease. Goodness, passion, ignorance. Goodness, the material flavor of goodness you won't find too often in this world. It's not spiritual, but still, you won't find it. Passion, you'll find lots of that. And ignorance, you'll find lots of that. A good way to understand these modes of nature is, just like here in New Zealand, people know what the winds mean. I didn't know that when I first came here. People talk about the southerlies and the northerlies and the, you know, what's the big deal? Which way the wind blows, you know? It's like in New York, you know, if you got a weather report, it never says anything about which way the wind blows. I mean, who cares, you know? But because New Zealand is a maritime climate, everyone lives in reference to the winds. They know a southerly means cold air, a northwesterly means warm air. So people are sensitive to how the wind blows. But if you're a a foreigner and you turn on the weather report in New Zealand, it makes no sense to you. All they do is talk about wind directions. So, the three modes of nature are like winds of influence that blow, and they affect everything. According to your type of body that you have, due to your past life activities, you're susceptible to being influenced by certain modes. Now let's read about determination. We shall turn to... Page 822. We're going to start from the bottom. Now let's see where we're at. Let's try to catch ourselves where we're really at. This is text 35. Yaya Swatnam Bayam Shokam Visharam Badane Vicha Navimush Chati Gomeha Chitisa Pata Thamasi. Now, Henry, you want to read the translation?
And that determination which cannot go. That determination which cannot go beyond dreaming, fearfulness, lamentation, moroseness, and illusion. Such an intelligent determination, O son of Buddha, this is in the mode of darkness.
So let's visualize that. Let's see if this applies to us. A determination which is always daydreaming and fearful, lamenting, morose, in illusion. Mainly people who are taking intoxication or sleeping a lot or lost in watching television and the movies, they have this determination like this. You can read the purport.
It should not be concluded that a person in the mode of goodness does not dream. Here, dream means not much sleep. Dreaming is always present, either in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. Dreaming is a natural occurrence. But those who cannot avoid oversleeping, which cannot avoid the pride, who cannot avoid the pride of enjoying material objects, who are always dreaming of lording it over the material world, and whose life, mind, and senses are thus engaged, are considered in the to have determination in the mode of ignorance.
Always dreaming of lording it over material nature. You know, fantasizing, daydreaming, yes, what it's going to be like to really enjoy, I'm going to make it, or even though I know I'm not going to make it, still let me dream that I've made it. This is a symptom of determination in the mode of ignorance. Sleeping a lot, so much sleep. People consider it a great luxury today to sleep a lot, don't they? Life is so painful when they're awake that they'd rather go to sleep. And to do that, they take intoxication. If they can have a long sleep, 12 hours straight, isn't that considered the topmost perfection? Yeah. 12 hours sleep. You have to get some good scotch or whiskey or whatever. That's how low the aspirations are. Just get a long, good sleep. Yes, it's true, isn't it? So this is determination in the mode of ignorance. Constantly dreaming of how you're going to be happy in the material world. In a state of intoxication. This is quite common. You'll see that. People think this is the perfection. That's why all the pubs are there. So people can have this determination in the mode of ignorance. That's why all the movies are there. The television is there. Just to keep you dreaming. Yes? Now let's go up a step. We'll go up a notch. We'll go up to the mode of passion. That's the preceding text, 34. Up above. I'll just read the Sanskrit. Deyatu dharma kamatan dhritya dharayate yukhina prasangena palakamshi dhriti sa parta rajasi. Page 822. Would you like to read that translation?
A set determination by which one holds fast to fruitive results in religion, economic development and sense gratification is of the nature of passion, O Arjuna.
That what? You can read that paper?
Here I am?
Yes, please.
Any person who is always desirous of fruitive results in religious or economic activities, whose only desire is sense gratification, and whose mind, life and senses are thus engaged, is in the mode of passion.
Yes. Okay. Fruit of results. That means you want the fruits. You understand that? You want the You want the benefits. So that is determination of the mode of passion. I've got to put in my work day because I gotta get that check. I've got to put in my work day because I want a bigger income. But why is religion also listed here? Because for most people, religion is a means for better sense gratification. Oh God, give us our daily bread. Oh God, give us good health. Or when there's a world war, then one side is praying, oh God, kill the enemy. The other side is praying, oh God, kill the enemy. Actually, God has nothing to do with either side. So this is religion in the mode of passion. You want some material gain. So Krishna is saying that someone who has determination or their passion, they cling very tightly to the benefits they want from religion, from economic development, and from sense gratification. I'm determined to do this. I'm determined to stick this out because I want the benefits. I want money. I want sense pleasure. I want a good time in this world, and I'm determined. I want that bigger television. What a big screen these days.
Yeah.
I want that, what they call, they don't even call it a television, but it's a home entertainment system, a home theater. I want that home theater. I want good romance. I want a good home. Comforts. This is determination, the mode of passion. If human life is simply concerned with these things, then very bad. Now, obviously, it looks like these two verses we've discussed take in almost everything that human, so-called human society is doing these days, right?
Right.
Either determination in the mode of ignorance, or determination in the mode of passion. Now we'll go to determination in the mode of goodness, and you'll see why it's non-existent. Even though the material mode of goodness is not spiritual, it's just the least, the lesser disease that you can get. Text 33. Vrittaya dharayate manapanendriya kriya yogena vyabhicharanya Dhriti sa partha sattviki. Would you like to read? I'm sorry, what is your name?
Oh, David.
David.
the ocean of Krita.
Krita?
Mm-hmm.
That determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained with a steadfastness by yoga practice, and which thus controls the activities of the mind, life and senses, determination and the mode of goodness. Yoga is a means to understand the Supreme Soul. One who is steadily fixed to the Supreme Soul with determination, concentrating one's mind, life, and sensory activities on the Supreme, engages in Krishna consciousness. That sort of determination is in the mode of goodness. The word
avyabhicharanya
is very significant. For it indicates that persons who are engaged in Krishna consciousness are never deviated by any other activity.
Now, here we read that we read about steadfastness by yoga practice, which controls the activity of the mind, life, and senses. Very unpopular subject matters these days. No one cares about controlling their mind and senses. They think, in fact, that it's very barbaric to control your mind and senses. It's from the medieval times. Now, people are supposed to be so happy because whenever they feel a desire, they act on it. And that way they're supposed to be free from psychological problems. They cannot appreciate determination to control the senses. Just like Juliet when she first started practicing Bhakti Yoga, Krishna consciousness. Her mother objected. Dare you stay out all night and do so many things, and you know, but to take up the spiritual discipline of controlling your mind and senses? Horrible. You're brainwashed. But she had a boyfriend and so many things like that. Oh, okay, it's okay, right. These things, it's part of life. You have some children?
Yes, I do.
So, how many parents do you know who are very happy to see their children take up discipline to control their mind and senses?
Well, most of the children are growing up, they're well beyond the taking something like that up from an early age, but they don't have any, really.
Right, that's the problem. Mm. What Bhagavad Gita is teaching you here is what is real determination and steadfastness. It's measured not in your drive to get ahead, drive to get a better house or better job. No. Real determination is the drive to control your senses and mind according to a plan. Yoga practice means discipline in trying to connect with the Supreme. This kind of determination you don't see. All you see is determination in passion and ignorance. I want money, I want sense pleasure, I want a religion that brings material benefits to me. Or I just want to dream and sleep. That's all you see. And this is the tragedy. That means no human culture, no human civilization. It doesn't exist. This is very important to understand. If you can get out of the habit, get out of the conditioning of looking for a human society that you're living in, you'll save yourself a lot of trouble. So Prabhupada, who presented Bhagavad Gita as it is, he told us once, walking in the city, he said, "You may see streets full of people walking here and there. I just see walking dead persons."
Never thought of that, is right.
But no, try to understand. What are they doing while the body is living that is so special? What are they doing that's so special? if you really think about it.
That's some of the chatter.
But, you know, that's something else that's coming out. What are they really doing with those patients?
Is there anything that's so earth-shattering that what they're doing?
Yeah. You've already admitted that they're not doing anything different from the animals.
Yes, just giving birth.
Yes. And furthermore, they're not really doing anything different that should make them be characterized as living.
You're a bit high, I think.
Okay, then you defend, please. All right, and maybe so, but you need to try to get me to see.
Oh, I don't know. I was driving down the other day, and a truck in front of me, started to go like this, and I looked at her and pulled that mystery out of the way as much as I could. And then it's a favorite, skidded down on the side. And it was an off-ramp I just pulled up by the off-ramp. And I said, blow, I'm not going to go on that motorway and try and run back and see if they're all right. There's cars going in all directions, you know. And I watched in my rear vision mirror, and two cars stopped. And one parked behind, one parked in front of this thing, and two young guys got out. And before you knew whether one of them was up on the thing, you know, opened the door and helped the lady out who was driving and another man inside it. Well, I mean, that's... It was done rather instinctively, I should say, without even thinking. So there must be something in human beings that goes out of their way to help somebody else.
But what is the nature of that help? Bhagavad Gita will ask you to analyze the nature of that help. You were very moved to see that.
Yeah.
But they were giving help to the body, which is something. But just like you have a rip in your coat jacket there,
mm-hmm.
Now, I come along and sew the rip. Have I solved your ultimate problem?
Yes, it's I have to figure it out, I guess. There's one thing I know, I think it's Newton or somebody like that said that you know, he feels like a child standing at the side of the ocean, he tossing a shell or a pebble into the sea while the whole sea is stretched in front of him full of knowledge that he doesn't know anything about.
So you felt very moved to see these people get out and help the lady out of the overturned truck. But do you feel moved when you can see someone attempting to give someone real spiritual knowledge?
Oh, yes, I don't think I would say yes.
The two cannot be compared in importance. Is it a bit warm in here? Shall we open the window? Or just right here?
Mm-hmm. Yes. But there's so many different people all trying to give spiritual knowledge. I mean, it's... It's a little difficult to know which is the correct one, isn't it?
Therefore, just like to buy a used car is difficult. So many cars are on the market. What to do? You have to educate yourself how to make the right choice. That's why Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita. You read it?
I haven't read the whole thing. I haven't even read the whole Bible, so I don't suppose it's... I did try to plow through the Mormon book, but that was even...
Well, Bhagavad Gita is easily recognized as a profound piece of literature.
Yes.
You should read it from cover to cover. There, Krishna presents the qualifications of someone you should listen to.
Yes. I read some of the... Albert Schweitzer was most impressed with the... I don't know if he followed the teachings, but he certainly believed in them to some degree.
He felt the Vedas were life and world negating because he got a bit disturbed that the Vedic literature is characterized material life as suffering and temporary.
Yes.
If I tell you that you will get old and die, does that mean I'm being world and life negating?
I think it's just being realistic.
Right. So, the Vedic solutions are being realistic. And the, more than that, they're giving you a solution. The solution, how to conquer the problem of birth and death. So what is Albert Schweitzer want? But some people, they feel like that. Oh, you... Hare Krishna's always talking about the miseries of the world and this and that, and he's always killing all the fun.
Yes, yes.
Now, you've flown before?
Yes.
Now, what happens right before the plane takes off?
That little prayer.
but what does the staff check it all, you know, they get through a checklist
and...
what do they do?
You know, but technically what they do is that they go through a whole pattern of different things and then they decide to take off, I guess.
Yeah, but don't they
get a distraction from the chair?
But doesn't the flight crew, the steward or the stewardess, don't they go to the whole spiel in the unlikely event of an emergency?
Oh, yes.
Now, what do? You holler at them, "You're being negative! Stop!" Do you do that? "You're being world and life negating!"
Yeah.
Don't make me paranoid.
Yeah. Do you holler at them when they do that?
No, I don't.
Why not?
I wouldn't do that.
Why?
Well, I think it's useful information that they're giving.
Okay, so similarly, the butter is full of useful information in the unlikely event that you may die. Now, it is true what you're saying, that there's so many books and spiritual this is and that. You have to be educated in what you're looking for, just like when you buy a car. Any knowledge that you're considering to accept has to demonstrate that it originates with a perfect source, originates from a perfect source. Otherwise, why bother? That's a great way to sift through all the different so-called spiritual understandings, isn't it? What do you think? David, is that?
All right. Tell us more.
In a Vedic civilization, there are two standards you have to cope with. Whatever knowledge you hear has to be traceable back to a perfect source, and whatever person you hear from has to be able to trace their credentials for being a transmitter. They have to be able to trace their credentials back to the perfect source. Now suppose you haven't studied electricity, right?
Yeah, I have, sir.
You haven't? Alright, but I haven't. Now, suppose I ask you, David, how do I turn on the light? What will you say?
Push the two contacts. Turn on the light switch.
Turn on the light switch. So I go and turn on the light switch, but I don't know anything about electricity. Seemingly. But I hear what you say and I press the switch. Does the light come on? Yes. So Vedic knowledge is practical. It's concerned with transformation. What are the effects? You've studied electricity fully, more or less. I haven't. But when you turn on the light switch, it comes on. When I turn the light switch, it comes on. So I'm getting the benefit of your knowledge because I'm following your instruction and I save so much time. So, the whole of Vedic civilization is based on Krishna says this. Now, no one can be as full in knowledge as Krishna. Not possible. Krishna is the supreme. Everything about Krishna is unlimited. Yet, if you do what Krishna says, you'll get the result. Even though you'll never be omniscient like Krishna. So you told me, you know about electricity. You told me, turn the switch. I tell that to someone else. Turn the switch. The light also comes on for them. So before you try to learn anything or hear from someone, you must check those two things. Is the knowledge you're trying to give me traceable back to a perfect source? And can you trace your credentials as a speaker of knowledge? Can you trace your credentials, your lineage, shall we say, back to a perfect source? When those two things are present, then you're in good shape. Otherwise, why waste your time? You understand that, Nugget?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, yes. Yes, I think you're right.
Okay, then you're ready to read Bhagavad Gita.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Now, there may be so many different books and ideas we can toy with, but what's the use in wasting our time if we know that they don't come from a perfect source? We're just chilliating our minds. Just like when you sit before the TV. You know it's complete manipulation.
Hmm.
You know they're just trashing your mind.
Hmm.
But you want some kind of entertainment, something to fascinate you, right?
Right.
Better use that intelligence to peruse Bhagavad Gita. Now, you may not immediately say that Bhagavad Gita comes from a perfect source, but at least you know that you might as well take your chances on things that say they come from a perfect source as opposed to things that don't, right?
Yeah.
And so that way you discriminate. Save yourself a lot of trouble. What do you say about that, Dave?
Oh, sorry, that's true.
Right. If you're going to have to... put your money on something. You put your money on at least something that says it's perfect and you try to check it out. Why waste your time with things you know don't come from a perfect source?
Why waste your time?
Yeah. Exactly. This is proper gambling. Srila Prabhupada said that. This is proper gambling. You can gamble on Krishna.
Whatever you do, you're okay in my book.
Huh? What's that?
I just was, forgive me, I was just raising a laugh.
Yeah, you're gambling?
I think it was somebody said, you know, whatever you do, you're okay in my book. And I used to write a book about sex and all that, you know. That's,
I used to read those, huh?
No, I don't know why. But you were talking about the end of the book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's so many different books, isn't there?
There's so many books, but how many books say that they come from a perfect source?
Well, this is Christianity.
Where does it say in the Bible this comes from a perfect source?
The
verse. What verse?
I'm not a student of the Bible. I can't read it.
But how do you talk of the Bible? You're not a student of the Bible.
Well, at least I'm elevating. Well, I'm not elevating. You know, well, put it the other way. I'm elevating the Bhagavad
Gita
on a level with the Bible.
Well, is that an elevation or a? Now you say there's so many books, but how many books say they're coming from a perfect source? That narrows your field down very nicely.
Well, it's only just the religions of the world, isn't it? What are you talking about?
No, religion. Somebody's belief We're talking about knowledge coming from a source that has perfect sensory capacity. Isn't that something?
Well, when the Bible says in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was whatever it is, and the Word was made flesh, and...
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was...
I can't quite do it, but roughly speaking, it means that the thing that keeps everything going is the Jehovah, I think, is the fact.
You give us knowledge of Jehovah. You're speaking of Bible, give us knowledge of Jehovah.
Well, nobody has seen Jehovah, as far as I know. You can't look at Jehovah, otherwise you
heard up, huh?
And the Jewish people, when they were following Abraham and Moses and different things, when Moses went up the mountain and saw Jehovah, he didn't see a person or anything like that.
Didn't he just see a burning bush or something? Yeah.
Oh, well, that was another time.
In any case...
You have to go up to get the commandments.
All right. Here's the point, though. Where is the knowledge of God?
I don't think you're going to find the answer in the book.
Why not? You think it's not possible for the Supreme to utilize a book? What's the big deal?
Possibly if you get somebody to explain it all and put their interpretations and...
I want to know about you. What's the best way for me to know you?
Well, you'd have to hang out together, I guess, and...
Okay, so Bhagavad Gita will train you how to associate with Krishna through sound.
Yeah.
But look at another way. Let's say I want to know about you. What should I do? I can ask Nugget. What about him? How would that make you feel?
Well, it wouldn't mind. Nugget doesn't know me from bad sight, sir.
Exactly! So, what you're saying, then, is if I want to know you, I should either ask you or ask somebody who knows you, right?
Yeah, oh, yes, yeah, sure.
Can you explain about yourself? Can you explain about yourself?
There's only thing I know is that I know nothing. This is
You can explain about yourself.
Yeah.
And you're just a tiny entity. So why cannot the Supreme explain all about the Supreme? Yes?
Yeah, there's a little... I must admit that I only skimmed over what I read.
No, really.
Down on Queen Street there, you know.
We're just talking common sense.
That's... some of the things that you read, you have to sort of question them a little bit.
No, we're not talking about blind things. We're just, right now, we're just discussing that if I want to know you, I should hear from you.
Right.
And you'll explain. I am like this, I am like that, I live here, I do this, these are my qualities, these are my likes and dislikes.
Yeah.
Now, you're just a tiny part of the Supreme. So if you can do that, why can't the Supreme do that?
Well, I wish he would. I have to say a blinding light, like Paul or Saul.
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, I am like this, I am like that. If you want, you can come to me. Here's my address. So?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can say it to yourself 100 times, 10 times a day, every hour.
Say what to yourself?
You know that Krishna is the creator, or Krishna is the source of...
Yeah, that's all right, but if Krishna is explaining in depth all these things, wouldn't that be something?
Well, it would be something if you really believed it.
No. Wait.
Doesn't really mean anything.
No. We're not talking about belief. If you can take information directly from the Supreme and find out all about the Supreme in a comprehensive way, isn't that advantageous?
It could be, yeah.
If it can actually happen, isn't it advantageous?
Yeah.
So at least you should explore the possibility. Now, you mentioned the Bible. Okay, the Bible has a little bit of something to it, but you don't get any comprehensive understanding.
It mightn't matter too much, though, really, because I'm just looking on my mother, who was a staunch Catholic. She died quite a few years ago. And Catholics don't, as a rule, read the Bible to any great extent. They rely on the priest in that to explain it.
Well, they probably save a lot of time on that, really. I mean,
give more time on how Mary's
in there. I mean, the point is,
yeah, but the point is,
there's no real, what is the knowledge? It's a simple book meant for simple people. It's meant for fishermen and people living in the desert.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what it was. What
it does. Well, you
actually believe.
No. You missing the point.
Yeah, I'm getting you.
Okay, now listen.
This life, I'm talking about this life in which we're all in this life together. We've got to get through it the best way we can.
And what is the best way?
Well,
to get the best knowledge.
As far as she was concerned.
No.
The fact that she believed that she was going to go to heaven when she died was what everybody kept her going.
Still.
And that would keep her going in ill health, good times, bad times. Because she really believed it.
All right, but we're not...
Now, you really believe in Krista.
No, it's not the same. It's not the same.
It must be the same.
No, this is a speculation.
Because you can't tell me that everybody that's become a Hare Krishna is still a Hare Krishna.
You're missing the point.
How many people have left the Hare Krishna?
You're missing the point. You're confusing belief with the conclusive, comprehensive, authoritative presentation of knowledge.
And that's in this book.
By the way, he is only the ABCs. Beyond Bhagavad Gita, we have so many texts explaining in detail. So, nowhere in Bhagavad Gita do you find Krishna saying, just believe. Not one verse is like that. Every verse is explaining comprehensive knowledge, and then Krishna says, act, put into action, and you'll see the result.
What does Krishna say about eating meat?
It's in the mode of ignorance. Eating in the mode of ignorance. These three modes that we've been discussing, they influence all aspects of human experience. Determination, happiness, knowledge, understanding, charity, eating.
So that it's not very good to kill an animal.
Well, the Bible says thou shalt not kill. But people like to open storehouses because they say God gave us dominion over all the animals, so that means you can open storehouses.
Well, humanity would be just as important as animals, wouldn't it?
Yes, but humans don't need to eat meat to survive.
No, but they take fire from wolves.
Yes.
Now, what does Krishna say about taking fire from wolves?
Because they're killing the animals, they have to die themselves.
No, I'm not talking about animals.
Because they slaughter the animals, they must get a reaction. They become slaughtered. For an eye, tooth for a tooth.
How can it be bad,
as the Bible says,
but to be okay to slaughter a human being?
You're asking me that? It's bad to slaughter completely. It's bad to slaughter completely. But you won't find any verses in Bhagavad Gita saying thou shalt not kill. Why is that?
I don't know.
If you have to tell someone not to kill, it means you're talking to a murderer. Pretty low-class person, you know. Bhagavad Gita doesn't deal with ordinary morality.
Well,
thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill. That means you're talking, you know.
But in different civilizations,
do I have to tell you, don't defecate in your clothes? No, I wouldn't tell you that. What do you mean? What are you telling me that for? What do you think I am?
Yeah, but even now, I mean, when you have a meal here, if you suddenly burst and made a horrible noise and that, and discuss with everybody around, you would rightly say, well, look, don't act that way, please, because you're in my house. But if you go to different other countries and you did that, if you didn't do that, they would think there's something wrong with the food.
But we're talking
a matter of what was civilized in Romania and Roman age is not civilized anymore.
But you're jumbling a lot together. Try to understand what I'm saying. And don't try to, obscure the point. In Bhagavad Gita, you won't find Krishna saying, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, because such instruction is for people who are very low. If you have to tell them, don't kill, don't steal, you don't have time to explain to them the intricacies of transcendental knowledge. Understand? So, the audience of the Bible was far different than the audience that Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to a caliber of human beings far beyond what exists today.
Yeah, but they're still fighting those themselves, aren't they?
But before you make an accusation, you have to try to understand the nature of the battle that Bhagavad Gita is about. Before you just can't, like, you know, make a blanket statement like that. You have to get into the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the battle of Kurukshetra was fought according to Vedic injunctions. It's not that the whole population was involved, only the martial class. The civilians knew nothing about warfare. The martial class would go outside the city into some deserted area and have it out. No civilians would be touched.
Yeah.
And why were the martial classes fighting? Each side thought, I can protect the citizens better than you, therefore I should be in charge. The citizens were not involved. They simply paid taxes to whoever walked off the battlefield alive.
But this wasn't on Earth, though, was it?
Yes, yes. This is real civilization we're talking about. This is Vedic culture. Now, what kind of warfare do you have? War means kill the civilians and then the government will surrender.
Well, it's developing, but that didn't used to be. I mean, this would be a bit like the battle that you're referring to, you know, they'll all go out and have it out together.
Nowadays, the quickest way to win a war is to kill the women and children. That's what they do.
Yeah.
So, before you might criticize the battle of Kurukshetra, which Bhagavad Gita concerns, you have to understand more about that battle. It was fought according to Vedic codes and guidelines.
Yes.
There's much more to it than that.
And did they die, or did they sort of come back to life, or were they just reincarnated later on?
But they understood that if we engage in battle according to Vedic codes, if we die, we get a better situation in our next life. If we win, we enjoy the earth. If we die, we get a better birth in the next life. They liked it. The martial class liked this. They wouldn't miss it for anything. But you can't identify with that because you're not a martial man. That's why in Bhagavad Gita Krishna explains there are different types of mentalities. There's the intellectual mentality, there's the martial administrative mentality, there's the merchant farmer mentality, and there's the laborer mentality. Krishna says, it's like that because I made it that way. Yeah, not that. So all this is there in Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
So before you just say, oh, it's all religious belief, let's try to find out what is the most comprehensive, in-depth spiritual knowledge. But the problem is, because we have a little bit of Bible background, we think, well, it all must be like that, you know, just kind of Jehovah, whatever that is, God, whatever that is. We can't really believe that there's such a thing as in-depth, comprehensive spiritual knowledge coming from a perfect source. You understand my point, yeah?
I'm still a little doubtful about it, but...
Then you should see for yourself. You read for yourself. You read Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
Why prejudge like that? Well, what you're saying is, I doubt if there could ever be such information. That's what you're actually saying. I doubt. From my experience, of all the religious people I know,
yeah,
and a little bit of Bible study I've done, I doubt that there could be a comprehensive source of spiritual knowledge coming from a perfect source. Which is more than just a belief. I doubt it. That's actually your thing? That's not fair, is it?
Yeah, but I'm being factual. I mean, all the other books are just the same.
I doubt that New Zealand goes beyond the Bombay Hills. I really doubt that. See those hills down there, you know? That's where New Zealand ends, at the Bombay Hills. People who head off down Bombay Hills, I don't know what happens after that. They just go out of it.
They don't come back.
The world ends at the Bombay Hills. Now, suppose I said that, what would you say?
Well, if you really believe it, I'd have to be sure we went to that quite all there.
Huh? Probably.
What? You think that you weren't quite all there, you know, without so much of leave.
You think I wasn't quite all there?
Yeah, but you can prove it because you can drive down past
the hill. Okay, so Krishna gives you the means in Bhagavad Gita to prove it.
Yeah.
He says, if you do like this and do like that, you'll get such and such a result. Now what more do you want out of Krishna?
Well, getting back to the, when we started, you want to have the wherewithal to keep on going, don't you? You have to look after the body first.
You have to look after your coat jacket first, huh?
Yeah.
So when your coat jacket is nicely pressed, you know you've solved your main problem in life, right?
Well, then you can carry on from there and look into other things. That's an old saying, the angry man is an angry man, and...
You've had difficulty getting food all your life.
No, we've been very lucky here.
Okay, so then why not solve your real problem?
But, you know, you see these pictures of all these people that are starving in excellent third world countries. You don't see too many of them reading books or Bibles or Hare Krishna or anything else.
Oh, you go to India, rich man, poor man, they're all studying Bhagavad Gita.
Well, they must have enough to eat, but I mean, I'll tell you, because it's a powerful force. Hunger. Will do many.
You've been hungry before, you've gone hungry.
Oh, no, I haven't. For a couple of days, and that was not it.
Why do you bring this up then?
Well, because it's one of the problems of the world.
It's
hunger.
Bhagavad Gita will teach you the real problem of the world is that people do not live according to the instructions of the Supreme, therefore, material nature restricts their food supply.
Yeah, well, I suppose if they're all eating meat and cows and everything else, and that it's causing things.
Yes, you're right. You know the statistics, right?
Mm.
How much waste there is by taking grains and feeding the animals, and then killing the animals, eating the animals, rather than just eating the grains directly from the ground.
Yes.
So.
And the work that you're doing in the Western nations, it should be good, because if you can change that, it'll make it a bit better for the rest of the world.
But that's just one area.
That's true.
There's so many aspects of life.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never figure the whole system out. You have to take the information from the Supreme. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives you the whole comprehensive game plan. All the ins and outs.
Mm-hmm.
What is God? Name, form, qualities, activities. What is your original nature? What are you doing in this world? In detail, comprehensive. But what do we say?
No.
Don't believe it. Or it's your belief. You're entitled to your belief.